Welcome back to J-Air, and the time now is 9:26, and we have in the studio, we had Emily, who's maybe going to hang around and maybe have a chat with us later on. Our next guest is president of the Middle East Forum, an American non-profit organization that promotes American interests in the Middle East and protects Western values from Middle Eastern threats. He's an American historian, writer and political commentator, foreign policy analyst, and a specialist on the Middle East and Islamism. And his biweekly columns appear regularly in the Washington Times and in newspapers around the globe. He is regularly appears on CNN and Fox News. He is, of course, Daniel Pipes, and his opinions on the Middle East are always in demand. I spoke to him a few days ago via Skype in Philadelphia to talk about the Hamas-PA merger and its implications. Let's hear what he has to say. Good morning, Daniel. Welcome to Nothing Left on Jewish Community Radio, J-Air.
Thank you. Good to talk to you, Michael.
I think the last time we met was in August last year in Melbourne, and the courtesy of Colin Rubenstein's AJAC organization.
Indeed it was.
That's right. I would like to talk to you about the Middle East, or perhaps a better term would be the Muddle East, the way it's going at the moment. In 2011, when Hamas and the PA announced reconciliation, it was thought this would spell the end to US aid. In fact, I remember members of the American Congress, Democrats and Republicans, House Foreign Affairs Chairwoman Alina Ross Leighton, I think her name was, Gary Ackerman and Nita Lowey, warning, unless Hamas accepts the Quartet principles, which include renouncing violence and recognizing Israel, the formation of a united government would be a death blow to the peace process. What's happened between sort of then and now?
Well, I think members of Congress in 2014 are speaking similarly to the way the trio just mentioned did in 2011. It's the administration in both cases that is reluctant to cut relations and aid with the Palestinian Authority. So that is consistent with 3 years ago.
So they're still going to fund the PA with the connection with Hamas?
That's what the administration wants to do, yeah. But, you know, you mentioned 2011. There have been a number of occasions when Palestinian Authority and Hamas have tried to get together, a member of the Mecca Accords of 2007 and so forth. It's never worked, and I don't think it's going to work now, because they are rivals. They have a common goal, which is the elimination of Israel, but they differ in terms of personnel, approach, tactics, principles, and the like. So every time they try to reconcile, it ends rather soon after, and I would predict it will again this time end rather soon after for one reason or another. So to me, this is a bit of a tempest in a teapot because I just don't expect it will last.
That's right. The 1988 Hamas Charter explicitly commits the Islamist terror group to murder Jews. It's hard to argue that there is no fundamental difference between Hamas and the PA. For example, I think in an interview last year with the PA president Mahmoud Abbas on Russian TV network RT, he said, quote, "I don't see much difference between their, that's Hamas, policy and ours." Would you agree?
Well, I just said that yeah. The mutual goal is the elimination of Israel. So that sense,
so that's
they're very similar, but they have had some terrible relations between them. For example, when Hamas took over Gaza from the PA in 2007 to a murder spree, and their tactics are very different. The PA tactic since the Oslo Accords of 1993 have been flexible to say what's needed, to do what's needed in order to maintain relations with Western states, to maintain relations with Israel. And they wink at Hamas and say, look how clever we are. we're getting all these benefits by being flexible. And Hamas replies indignantly, you're selling your soul. You should be steadfast like we are. And they argue this, but it's just a matter of tactics and, of course, of personnel. You're either on one side or the other. So in the end, I call them the good terrorists and the bad terrorists.
Yeah, it's like a good cop, bad cop, isn't it, with Hamas?
Their goal is the same, but they have real differences between them. But so far, they have not been able to sustain any kind of union. I'd be surprised if they do this time either.
Yes, and what about the Europeans? The stumbling block is always the Europeans have got such a staunch support. They're anxious for this to work, and they're probably naive to believe it will work. What do you think that the Europeans are going to be a problem trying to promote that alliance?
Europeans are a diplomatic lightweight. It doesn't really matter. They provide money, which does matter, but so does the U.S. government. U.S. taxpayer, to be exact, provides on the order of $500 million U.S. dollars. And that, from all appearances, will continue should this union of Hamas and the PA continue.
In 1988, you said, no one should expect a Palestinian state on the West Bank and Gaza to end the Arab-Israeli conflict. I imagine you still stand by that statement?
Sure do.
Okay, and another statement you said, finally, just in 1990, you said, there can either be an Israel or a Palestine, but not both. So is that, do you still stand by that, or do you think anything's changed?
Well, imagine that the Israelis decided today to withdraw to the 1967 boundaries, including the whole of the West Bank, the whole of Eastern Jerusalem, Golan Heights. Imagine they did that, which is what everybody wants them to do. Do you think the next day the various entities would say, well, thank you, Israel. This is wonderful. We now accept you. The conflict's over. You're wonderful people. Or do you think they'd say, ha, we've conquered new territory. Now on to Tel Aviv and Haifa. I think to ask that question is to answer it.
Well, that's right. That's an obvious answer. But the problem has always been giving land for a piece of paper that says peace. What I can't understand is why the Jewish supporters in America, like particularly J Street and their ilk and the Progressive, are so strongly trying to push Israel into such a commitment, knowing that it's just doomed to failure.
Well, I don't think they know it's doomed to failure. They do think that such efforts as the John Kerry's recent diplomacy and others will work this time. In other words, my view as a skeptic would be that this whole enterprise from 1993, the Oslo Accords and their consequence, have been fatally flawed. They presume that the PA is willing to reach an accommodation with Israel, live in peace with Israel. Those who believe in the Accords assume that the PA, Arafat, Abbas, others, have come to agree with Israel, and it's just a matter of working out all the modalities and the minor aspects of road and water and electricity and movement and the like. So in their view, 20-some years have passed frustratingly without getting those modalities correct. And if you could just get everyone together, just have the right size of table, the right temperature, the right mineral water on the table, then finally they'll be able to get an agreement, live by it, and there'll be peace. Those of us who are skeptical would see that PA or Arafat never believed in this. It was simply a tactic that he used in time of trouble. And that no one since in the hierarchy there believes in it are dubious and see this as more prevarication, more duplicity, and more problems. But it depends where you start. And you mentioned J Street. J Street believes in the sincerity of the Palestinians and just their, you know, their roadblocks, their what this or that, the other, that are in the way of reaching a full agreement.
But the J Street basically blame is more blame the Israelis. I mean, we just had Peter Beinart here, and basically all they go on about is it's Israel's for the, you know, they want Israel to give, 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 and they want to just right. trust the Palestinians. And
if you believe the Palestinians truly had a change of heart 21 years ago, then you're inclined to see Israel as the obstacle. And you focus on Israel and demand more of Israel, and you're really not interested in the Palestinians. If you think the Palestinians, as I do, never really sincerely, or the Palestinian leadership never sincerely meant to reach an accommodation with Israel, but was simply signing the Oslo Accords out of desperation and without sincerity, then you focus on the Palestinians and their behavior, their murderous activities and their statements and so forth. There's a fundamental division, and the two sides can't really talk to each other. I mean, those who blame Israel and those who blame the Palestinians, because their assumptions are so different. One is a matter of technicalities, and the other is a matter of profound outlook. Or one blames technicalities and the other blames profound outlook.
Yeah, realistically, anybody that understands the Middle East, I mean, if in a miracle there was ever a Palestinian state, it, wouldn't it be more likely to end up like a Syria, a Egypt, a Libya, even a Lebanon, just another failed state on Israel's border in any case? Because their history shows us that they don't get along with each other, and it's more likely to be just another failed state on one of Israel's borders.
At this point, yes, absolutely. But because the Palestinians have been in such close proximity to Israel, they've learned a fair amount. Many of them know Hebrew. Many of them conversant with the intellectual, artistic, and other trends in Israeli life. And so they are in some ways ahead of their neighbors in the states you mentioned because of this proximity. And so if the goal of the Australian government, the American government, the Israeli government, and other governments was to focus on getting Palestinian acceptance of Israel, punishing them when they don't do that, and rewarding them when they do, rather than these crazy notions of diplomacy. But if we focus, if we instead of assuming Palestinian acceptance of Israel, we focused on achieving that, then I think the Palestinians could, in fact, emerge as a leader among Arabic-speaking peoples because of their advantage in knowing so much about Israel. And indeed, many of them admiring Israel. I mean, one of the themes I follow are Palestinians who recognize that Israel is a good place, a place where laws are applied, where the economy is on the way up, where civil rights are respected. There's a long, long list of such things, which I, in fact, follow on a blog. And it can be people shopping in stores. It can be leadership. It can be people wanting to maintain their pensions or medical benefits. It can be people who realize that however much they hate Israel, that it embodies worthy qualities. So I think there is a receptivity there. Unfortunately, none of the governments or major institutions are focused on winning true Palestinian acceptance of Israel as a Jewish state. They're all focused on some magical resolution to the problem. Magical in the sense because 80%, by my estimate, of Palestinians do not accept Israel. There is a base of 20% who do, and our focus in the Western world should be on increasing the 20%, 40%, 60%. And when that happens, then you can really have a peaceful resolution.
Well, it sounds like there's not going to be any change in our lifetime, because we've got to change that 20% to a more solvable, to a 50%. That's going to take a long time. Have you read Caroline Glick's book, her One State Solution?
I have not. Okay. I can't imagine any argument that suggests that Israel needs more Arabs. It just sounds to me bizarre.
Yes,
so no, I'm not really
I know.
Sure.
I think that's in desperation. One last question before I let you go. Do you think we'll ever see another Republican president in the White House in any time soon? Or is it going to be many, many years? And if so, do you think that would be better for Israel than what Obama has achieved or not achieved?
Well, there's no question that conservatives and Republicans are more friendly to Israel than liberals and Democrats, and that trend is becoming ever more apparent with time. Obama had a somewhat successful first term, but his second term in every way, both domestic and international, is proving to be far less successful.
Well, everybody predicted.
The question is whether what kind of legacy this will leave his potential successor. And I don't think it's looking good for the Democrats.
And will that successor likely be Hillary Clinton?
It's far too early to
tell. All right, look, Daniel Pipes, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk to Nothing Left and the Australian Jewish community. And I strongly recommend our listeners to subscribe to Daniel's blog site. I think it's www.danielpipes.org. Is that correct?
That is the website. And if you go there, you can subscribe to my mail, my free email list.
Well, it's definitely worth it. I've been following Daniel for years. He comes out here fairly regularly. We hope to see him soon. And I thank you very much and have a nice day. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye. Pleasure to talk to you.